WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now, and it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk, coming to you from Broadcast House. Hope that you were able to do something constructive during your Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. day of service. If you haven't had a chance to do something, it's still a few ticks on the clock. We have a great show lined up for you.
Good.
I like saying that every week. You know, like there's going to be one dud somewhere in the somewhere down the road. It's going to be a great. Oh, there's a dud this week. I'm sorry. No, you know, when I put thought into booking guests, try to have a rotation of some folks, have some new folks in, a voice you just heard a moment ago is none other than your chairperson for the Plymouth County Commissioners. Sandra Wright is here. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Kevin. How are you? Nice to be here.
Doing good, Commish. Doing real good.
Very good. How come everybody calls me Commish?
Because it sounds cool. It's got a cool ring to it.
That name has been taken all the way over to Plainville. Everybody over there calls me Commish.
That's a good thing, though.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Of course, speaking with the chairperson, we're going to talk about her assuming the role. As the chairperson, we'll talk about goals for 2022, the year that's ahead of us here. Even talk a little bit about preparing the 2023 budget. I know it's a ways down the way, but I'm sure there are some talks that are already kind of percolating. And then the latest on the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is an election year for you.
Yes, it is.
So we want to get word out as to all the work that you've done and why folks should keep in mind to make sure they check your name off on the ballot come later this year in September for the preliminary.
I'm so excited.
Are
yes.
you?
Yes, I am. I don't think in the past years I've ever felt excited, but I feel very good about it.
Energized.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
So we will have the commission on with us in just a couple of moments after we check traffic. After her, we have two old friends coming in. Remember Jeff and Eileen Hills? That's right. They are from the Healthy Appetites Natural Food Store located Camelot Park in Plymouth. I don't think Fenny's coming with them, but we're going to talk about some cool stuff. We'll talk about the new year, you know, maybe cool. Some vitamins you should add to your diet. But more important, talk a little bit about immunity supplements. Knowing that here we are, we're living in a pandemic. How will supplements boost our immunity? And also, what to look for when it comes to the best brain supplements. You're getting a little forgetful. Are there the things you feel as though you don't have clear enough thoughts? We'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe some of the ingredients to keep in mind if you are looking for a supplement.
Maybe I should be a study.
I'll sit in the chair next to you because I probably should be one as well. So, hour number two. Your good friend, Bishop Tony Branch. Tony, of course, is the chairman of the Commission on Diversity. Mm-hmm. He will be joining us, and we will once again have our discussion about Martin Luther King Day. Talk a little bit about civil rights. Where are they today? Mm-hmm. How are things going? Are we moving forward when it comes to equality, or are we still stuck in systematic racism. We'll talk with Tony about that. That's coming up at 7 o'clock. And then the final conversation of the evening, we have good friend Casey Sherman. Will be joining us, award-winning journalist, author, producer, podcaster. And there's a list of titles you can give Casey, but we'll look back at 2021, talk with him about some of the books that he has in the works, any news on his podcast, Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers, that he does with Dave Wedge, courtesy of Mudhouse Media, and even we'll dish on his new book, Helltown, The Untold Story of a Serial Killer on Cape Cod.
I am so stressed out. The school, home, bills, government, economy, gas prices, vaccines. It is so hard to get anything done and so stressful. We are all stretched to the max with no end in sight. We're all saying the same thing to one another. This is crazy. I'm not the bringer of bad news. I bring good news. And the good news is, we're all in this together. And I actually find comfort in that. So let's all take these stress-relieving, mindful breaths together. Don't change the channel. Shh. Take a breath. I'm inhaling. I'm exhaling. Brennan's Smoke Shop. Have a great day.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Everybody do it together. Breathe in. It's almost like we just completed the yoga session. It's very nice.
I think we need to do a little more.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for that public service announcement. Yes, you are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, also heard on 1460 WBMS, and on the web, 959WATD.com, streaming worldwide. Joining us right now, as you heard, she was sitting in for the intro. We have Sandra Wright. She is the chairperson for the Plymouth County Commissioners. How goes everything?
Good. You're just dancing all around there, making all kinds of moves.
Yeah, you know, it's what happens when you eat sugar late in the day. It doesn't process as well, and then when it does, it hits you at the wrong time.
Well, like I tell everybody, I don't sing, I don't dance, and I'm not funny. So there you go.
Yeah, I try not to be any of the above either. How are things going with the county? How are things going with the commissioners?
Oh, Kevin, I can't tell you just how good it's going. We are all so in tune together, and we are working so hard for so many things, and, you know, finally what Plymouth County is and what they should be doing. And I think it's just a great time, an exciting time. We've been able to do so much for our communities, which is a good thing. And, you know, as you know, the CARES Act was a total success, and you know, when all odds were against us, and yet we were able to do it, and we had a great team. You know, I have to give credit to our treasurer, Tom O'Brien, and of course all the communities, the staff that they had, they put everything together that just made it so much easier for us.
If you had to kind of just give a glance back, and I've asked your fellow commissioners, I've asked Mr. Valenzuela, I've asked Mr. Hanley, you look back, what do you feel are the accomplishments, the great accomplishments that the commissioners were able, or the county were able to, you know, write down in a ledger and say, we were able to accomplish this? Well, if you were to give me a few things, what would they be?
Well, you know, of course, I go back at the worst times. In 2010, when I first came in, you know, they wanted to abolish us. You know, we couldn't even get into the towns to have a conversation with any of them, you know, talk about regionalization or anything really that, you know, we could do to help them. It's taken a long time to prove that, you know, we are in a community together, and we have to work together, and we can do great things together, not separate, but together. I think, you know, just that alone, you know, we weren't abolished, and you know, that was very very trying times, and that was right after when I came in. I was elected in November, and December 1st, I was on a committee to abolish Plymouth County, which, you know, just didn't make sense to me, but, you know, we had to go through the next 2 years of finding out, you know, what makes us sustainable and, you know, how can we do it. And that was one of the things I always, I think, thinking back, first I always asked myself, is it broken and how can we fix it? What do we do to fix it? And it's been a long process doing that. So I think we've, you know, just come a long ways, and we are sustainable. We, you know, financially in a good way right now, fiscally responsible, and, you know, considering we were $1.2 million in a structural deficit back then, you know, we're nowhere near that. We've made a whole 90-degree turn.
When I've had a chance to speak with your colleagues on the commission, knowing here we are, it's another election year, and there's going to be a cornucopia of political forums that are going to be held on this very radio station.
Yep.
And the one question that is usually asked as part of the lightning round is what to do about county government. Are you hoping that one day that the elected folks on all levels will feel that county government is doing its job, and that a question like that doesn't need to be asked of someone seeking higher office?
I think, you know, we have gained great respect over this, you know, of course, when we took on the CARES Act, was not popular at all. I mean, we had everybody against us, and we were out there on our own by ourselves, until I think really the legislators looking into their communities. And, you know, I really want to praise them because they've done a great job. They saw the picture on the wall, and, you know, they joined in with us, and they supported us. Yeah. And I think, you know, we give them great respect in what they do, and I think that they need to look at us in a different frame of mind from where we were to where we are today.
That's interesting, because I remember when the county decided to embark on, you know, grabbing, you know, $90 million+ and wanting to distribute it, right?
I sweat.
And there were actually communities whose elected leaders were like, going, no, that's wrong, no. But yet, a few months later, some of those elected officials were standing front row when there was a picture taken, and they were getting a significant amount of money courtesy of the county to help supplement monies needed because of what was going on with COVID.
I think where they, you know, saw it could be used in their communities, you know, which they represented, and it was a big thing for them. You know, they took a risk too, you know, supporting us in this. But I really think that they saw, you know, what we could do and what we were able to do, and just step forward. And we couldn't have done it, you know, by ourselves. I shouldn't say that, but we were pretty positive of what our role was and where we were going, and, you know, we had everything in place that needed to be done, but we still needed our legislators to back us and to be there with us. We needed our communities to step up to the plate and also, you know, get the paperwork in and do it, you know, the applications correctly, and so it wasn't as hard for us to have to get ready for the audit, you know, at the end of everything and at the end.
Do you feel the success of the distribution of the CARES Act funds was somewhat of a blueprint for the ARPA money, the American Rescue Plan Act funds, that in fact the county is going to assist in distributing some of those dollars?
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the things I have down here. The CARES Act was just the framework to the administrators to fund through the American Rescue Plan. Our communities have come to us. They were grateful that, you know, what we did for them through the CARES Act. But they've actually come to us, and, you know, because of the success and because of their hard work, they know what it took. I think that, you know, we had their support, and they've begged us to, you know, do it, take it on and do it again for them. Don't forget, there's a lot of money involved in this. If they had to go out and hire their accountants and their law firms and everything to do this, you know, every community, can you imagine? And plus the staff, and it would have cost them a fortune. The whole idea of the CARES Act was to, you know, save them the burden from having to make some tough decisions at that time. And so, you know, because that was due to COVID. But again, you know, we were able to step in and help them and do. And the thing that I'm most proud of is, you know, we were able to do it for 1%, leaving more money on the table for our communities. And, you know, thanks to our treasurer and the communities in doing their hard work.
It's worth noting that, again, that there was a lot of disdain on the state level. There were folks who weren't happy with the fact that the county was stepping in. I know that, you know, former Commissioner Dan Pallotta was one of those individuals who was part of the group, yourself and Greg at that time. It was like, yeah, we should go after this money when it came to the CARES Act. Have you since had other counties that are still, you know, working, that are still, you know, active, come to you? Have you had other county officials say, hey, how did you go about that, and could you share with us the details? So if we wanted to do this for our membership.
Don't forget, this was new. This is something that's never been done by any county here. This is all new to all of us. And, you know, of course, I think the big question, I think the problem being and why they wanted us to give the money back was because Bristol County and Norfolk County had given their $90 million back. And I remember saying, no, we know our communities intimately. We know what their needs are, and we know we can get it out there faster. Well, what I like to say is we do it cheaper, faster, and better. And I think that's what all of us commissioners have, you know, that's kind of what we take on, saying that we can do. And thank goodness we had not the manpower, but we had the backing of all of us in unison. None of us were separate in any way. None of us were questioning whether or not we should do it. We were just gung-ho, let's do it. You know, this is what we need to do, and this is for our communities, and we do know them better than anybody.
You were you became chairperson once again as of late. How is that to be able to again serve in that capacity? And what do you feel your duties are as a chairperson, are leading this group?
Well, you know, I don't really think of it as a chairperson. I think that we're all together equal, and you know, there might be a little more responsibility. They sort of have to pass everything through me, you know, first. And you know, if there are any decisions, I can honestly say that none of us have really, you know, bucked one another. You know, we can sit at the table, we can discuss it, we can hash it over, and everybody is pretty much in unison. And you know, we take a lot of advice from our treasurer, of course, and tells us, you know, what's the best way financially and what we should do, shouldn't do, and then we can take it from there. You know, whether or not we take his word or not, you know, that's another thing, but we mostly do. You know, I think Tom is a great treasurer, and I think he has a lot of knowledge, and I trust him very, very much, and I'm very thankful every day that we have him. And, you know, we have a lot of good people. Frank Basler, who's our administrator, and, you know, he does a ton of work, and he's so good at what he does. I just, you know, I'm so thankful for the committee and for the members that we have there, because that's what makes it, you know, work.
What are some of the things that you hope that the county can accomplish in the year we're currently kicking off here in 2022? Are there certain things, other than, you know, the equitable dispersal of ARPA monies, what else?
Well, you know, we always say each one of us have our own wish list. I have many.
What's yours? What's your wish list?
I have too many to say.
Give us the top 10, top 5.
Well, you know, I've always been, you know, past was, you know, I was a firefighter. I'm always fighting for the firefighters. Police, you know, what's going on with the police? You know, what can we do for the police? You know, I've looked in, I've gone around to all the fire chiefs, I've gone around to all the police chiefs, asking them, what can we do? They need training facilities. We looked into that. We, you know, went to the... we have a piece of property down in Bridgewater. We have 11 acres down there. We had offered them, you know, some land down there to do some training. Going around to the police chiefs, I think one of the biggest problems that they have is they have nowhere to go out and train and do their shooting. I went to a police chief's meeting probably back 5 years ago and said that I wanted to build a gun range so that our police chiefs and our police officers can go out and get the adequate training that they need. So I think those are probably my two top things, and I'm focused a lot on them. But I know there are other things that my other commissioners have, and I'm willing to listen to them. I'm willing to back them. And if they feel very passionate about it, I think, you know, that might be a different direction we might go.
We're a couple of months off from there being a discussion as to the county's funding for 2023. How does everything look? Have you had any preliminary discussions about the budget?
Yeah, we have a meeting, actually the end of July, we're having a preliminary meeting. All of our heads of departments are now putting their budget together. And, you know, again, we'll come in with, you know, what is your want?
The end of January?
Yeah. Again, it's going to be, you know, what do you want? What are you looking for? And what's realistic? And then we'll discuss it from, you know, there on. And, you know, and another thing, too, I, you know, was going to bring up was the test kits. You know, you're always hearing that there aren't enough test kits. We did order 4 million test kits, and they're going to be coming out. We're going to receive those, I think, January 21st, probably over the road another 10 days. So I'm looking towards February.
This week.
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's,
can you believe
time
it?
Is going, no, time's going by so fast.
It was just Christmas 2 seconds ago.
It was, yeah. I'm still singing I'm going out caroling tonight. I don't know. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it does go by so fast. But that's, you know, that's the way we are. And I don't know, I often question, you know, why is it going by so fast when we're all confined? You know, we're not doing a whole lot of what we used to be doing, certainly, but it is going by fast.
Why do you like being a county commissioner?
Oh, my God. You know, when I, this goes back to 2010, I happened to call my brother when I thought, oh, I'm going to be a county commissioner. And my brother was very much involved in politics, and my whole family was, except for me. I never wanted anything to do with it. So I happened to call my brother back in 2010, maybe 2009. I said, hey, what do you think about me being running for Plymouth County Commissioner? He hung up on me. So I says, well, I guess that's a no. So in an hour later, he called me back and he said, I'll ask you one question. If you answer it right, I will support you. And so I said, okay. He said, why? I said, let me think about that for a minute. So, you know, I thought about all the things in county government. I knew that a lot of it was broken. I knew that, you know, it was in a bad way. I love challenges. I love anything you can challenge me with. I love challenges. So at that time, you know, I told him, I said, I love a challenge. I know the system is broken. Oh, and then he told me, first I had to go see the sheriff. He was going to take me down to see the sheriff. And I said, oh, my goodness, you know, what is this going to be? Is this an exorcist or what? You know, it's like, why am I going to see the sheriff? But, you know, and I went and I spoke to the sheriff. And, you know, I have great respect for him. You know, he listened to me. He asked me a lot of questions, you know, what my interest was and why I wanted to be a county commissioner. I named off a few things that I knew the county was suffering and it needed help in, and I loved the challenge, and I thought, I can do it, and a no is not a no forever, and I can make it work, because that's what I always do. I, you know, love challenges, and I love to go in and challenge myself.
Well, this is election year for you.
Yes, it is.
I think it's yourself, and I think Mr. Hanley's seat is up.
Yeah. Commissioner Hanley's not up.
Is just you?
Just me.
Just me. Okay.
The other two are up together. I'm the only one that's up.
Oh, that's right.
Singly.
You are correct.
Yep.
You are correct. So we're saying two more years, and then it's Mr. Valenzuela.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. I'm solo in this.
And there's already, you know, a race forming. I mean, how's that feel, knowing that there's already a group of candidates that are looking to become county commissioners?
I just think, you know, I mean, sometimes it makes me angry because I think, where were they when the times were tough? You know, why didn't they come in and do it when times, you know, nobody ever wanted to be a commissioner, nobody even wanted to be acknowledged as a commissioner?
Right.
I've worked through it. We've built it up. It's doing great. You know, we're financially, we are, you know, doing wonderful. And I'm okay with that. I think everybody's entitled to run. I never assume anything. I get out there. I get my own signatures. Most of the time, I get most of my signatures. And I'm out there meeting the people. And I'm working hard. And I work for my seat. And I know in my heart that my job isn't done. I'm not done yet. I still have a lot to do.
Do you have a campaign website or any information, or is that something that has to come maybe in the spring?
No, I mean, I've been up there as a Plymouth County Commissioner on, and you can go in and look at my website. I don't even know what, I forget. Thunder Sandra Wright, Plymouth County Commissioner.
Okay. Anything you want to say in closing as we get ready to wrap up our segment?
I just want to thank you and WATD for having me on. It's always, you know, nice coming in here and talking about, you know, what we're doing and where we're going, where we're headed. And I look forward to the year coming up. I look forward to serving the communities again in ARPA and just doing whatever we can in the community. I think that that's our job. That's what we should be doing. That's what we should have been doing. And it's taken us a long time to get there.
She is Sandra Wright, Plymouth County Commissioner Chair.
Yes.
Some folks call it the commish.
Commish.
We thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We are going to step aside, but when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Jeff and Eileen Hills, your guest.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
I'm Ed, a volunteer with the Talking Information Center in Marshfield. Our mission is to provide human voice broadcasts of local news, articles, and items of interest to visually impaired and otherwise disabled listeners throughout Massachusetts to promote independence and enrich the quality of life. To get involved or make a donation, please visit ticnetwork.org. Please continue to support amazing nonprofit organizations on the South Shore.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
We're back. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, 1460 WBMS. Hey, and if you miss any of the radio program, if you've missed any of our shows, if you're somebody who likes listening to podcasts, I hope that you would download our podcast. You can just go to the homepage of the radio station, 959WATD.com, and you can download the latest podcasts. Well, we have some folks who previously did a radio program.
A couple years ago. It's been 5 years.
5 years now.
You probably know them as Jeff and Eileen Hills from Healthy Appetites Natural mm-hmm. Foods.
Yeah.
Once used to be on the strip there on Long Pond Road.
Yeah.
Now they have migrated
to the industrial park in Camelot Park. Yep. It's a big, beautiful, clean store. And our old location was taken over by somebody called Healthy Vibes. So that's not us, but she's wonderful too. But we are 3 minutes from our old location.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
How are things going? Things are going great.
Even in the new year?
The new year, I feel like for us, I mean, just speaking business-wise, I feel like we're doing better this year than we did last year.
Yes, and this is our busy time of year.
It is.
And so is it because of cold season, flu, and all that?
Yeah, we always tell people, we don't have Christmas season. We have cold and flu season.
And here we are.
That's when we do well.
That's right.
So it's funny, when I was talking to Eileen, I was like, well, because we were talking over topics, what can we talk about? Mm-hmm. One of the things I definitely want to talk about is supplements for brain improvement.
Yeah, I guess you're in some sort of a...
I'm getting old. I'm getting old.
I thought you were doing some sort of study.
You're still young to us, Kevin.
Oh. Immunity is key. That's also going to be another one of our topics.
Yep.
Okay. I did want to talk, just touch upon it for a moment. You know, it was the start of a new year. A lot of folks want to try to do things differently, whether it's, you know, be on top of their bills. Mm-hmm. Not so much the resolution stuff, because that's all nonsense. And half the people who have made resolutions, they're already gone.
They're already abandoned.
I didn't even make one this year.
But I think it's never too late to make sure that you are improving your diet and that you are taking supplements to, you know, for longevity.
Absolutely.
So I thought it would start out with that. I mean, you know, vitamins or any supplements that you could initially take for overall betterment.
I can tell you that we always recommend three things that everyone should take. And we've expanded the list since we've gone off the air 5 years ago.
We have.
Have you now?
I always feel like it's a good idea to do a good multivitamin. So you've got all your bases covered right off the bat to a certain extent by taking the multi. You know, we used to say all the time, people always say, oh, well, I eat really well, I don't need a multi. And I used to say, well, I drive really well, but I still wear a seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
So
others around you don't drive so well. Yeah.
Jeff, you know what I miss saying? I miss telling people to take vitamin D because it's sunshine for their brain. I just loved saying that.
You still say it in the store. So.
I do. But it's not as cool.
I would add that to the list because most multivitamins don't have enough vitamin D. So I think these days we've kind of expanded, you know, from just the multivitamin, which was the first thing. The second thing we usually recommend is a good fish oil, or if you are a vegan, you can always do a substitute sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you wanted to talk about brain function.
Yeah.
And I feel like the fish oil is one of the most important things for brain function.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a component in fish oil called DHA that's vital for brain function. It helps one brain cell talk to another brain cell. So that's very important for things like memory, ADD, or ADHD. And I think everyone should take that. Great for inflammation, great for your skin, great for your eyes.
And Jeff has ADD, so he can talk to that. That's why I said he knew so much about the brain, because I'm like, oh, you have the right person.
Yeah, I'm always trying to fix my brain.
Interesting enough, and not trying to jump ahead. I mean, if we're going to go right into the brain supplement stuff, I had sent you a picture of some of the stuff that I am. It's an expensive experiment, but I have done it nonetheless. Did you share that picture?
I did.
She told me the things that were in the picture. I haven't seen the picture.
I didn't show it to you.
So and again, knowing full well, because it's one of the things that, you know, you have a pet peeve when someone like is, it's radio.
Right.
It's not a visual medium. So, well, I'm showing Jeff, but then I'm going to read it off to the to the audience.
So she had mentioned that the things you're doing. I don't want to mention everything by name.
I will.
Okay. Well, the first one is the well-known for the commercials where they say that it's a protein derived from jellyfish.
Yes.
He doesn't think very highly of that one. That's why he doesn't want to mention the name.
It's not even that. It's just that I've seen the research on it, and it's not slam-dunk research. And I tried it. They've sent me bottles. They want me to carry their stuff. So they've sent me a couple bottles, and I tried it, and I didn't think it worked very well.
Okay.
So, I didn't see any difference whatsoever.
So myself, and this is not in any particular order or anything referring to what Jeff is saying, but the ones that I'm trying to, in fact, try to have a sharper mind, help me think a little clearer, because sometimes I can be a little scatterbrained. I'll be the first one.
As you said, it happens at this age.
It happens at the age. I'll find myself in the middle of a sentence, and I will forget something, and I know that I'm slipping a gear. I'm going to need to go into the shop soon.
I will be reading an article. I will, on my laptop, I'll open a new window so that I can do a search and see what something I read in the article to see if it's true or not. I'll get the window open. I'll go over and I'll be like, what the hell was I looking up? I couldn't remember what it was. I do this on a daily basis.
So should you really be giving advice for brain?
Maybe I shouldn't,
darling.
But here's the one thing that I've always appreciated from listening to your show back in the day. And even when myself and my nieces have come and visited the store. And Fenny, I'm surprised you don't have Fenny here. He's like the mascot of the damn store.
I know, we should have brought Fenny.
Fenny is like the best. I'm also a dog person, so self-admittedly. But you're so great at being able to break down components and what are some of the best components for your health. I used to listen to you all the time. You would do it effortlessly. Mm. So that's a provision of why you're here. First,
my brain was better when I was in practice back then.
You know that Jeff is almost 60 now.
No, he is not.
Yes.
I am.
He's 59. I'm 57.
Neither of you look your age.
Thank you.
But again, folks can't see you. But
our brains are old, I'm telling everyone.
But if you go to the website.
Just imagine that's very right. Young people. That's us.
You can look at us on our website. It's healthyappetites.com. And finally, I have a store on there, and we have pickup on there. So go there. It even tells you what we've got in stock.
Pictures of Fenny.
We were on Stephen Colbert in May.
Yeah, how did that happen?
Talk about that,
because that was freaking amazing.
I had a customer come and said, we had just moved to the industrial park and COVID hit, so I was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? A young woman came in and said, why don't you hashtag Colbert Show? They're going to promote small business. So I said, okay.
What do you get to lose?
What do I have to lose? So I hashtagged them, said, we're the last of the mom and pops, and we were chosen out of 100,000 people that asked him to, and I was in Florida. My mother was very ill, and so all of a sudden my phone starts blowing up at 11:30, and we were on Colbert. They did a whole segment. Our news channel 4 did it with him. It was a 5-minute segment, so that's on the website too.
It's a great clip.
It's amazing, and it shows where we are. That's what he did.
How do you go wrong? You can't go wrong with that.
I couldn't believe it. We are the luckiest people.
I think it's because you made such a simple plea. You said, I just want people to know we didn't go out of business. We just moved around the corner.
Yeah.
And that was your plea. Hey, Stephen, can you let people know that?
And yeah.
And that
was it.
It was such a gift. And then we haven't stopped since. So
Which is good. So digressing back to our brain.
The fun stuff.
Because, again, I don't want...
Well, you had asked what should we think everyone should do? So I said multivitamin and a good nutritional oil. I personally like a fish oil.
That's it though, huh?
I'm going to say the third thing that we've always said is a good probiotic. Now, good probiotics especially important this time of year because it's the majority of your immune system. So most of your immune system, depending on whose stuff you read, 70 to 80% is the bacteria living in your gut.
Right.
So you've got to keep that up as best you can. And a lot of things we do damage to that. You know, various medications, the things we eat and drink.
Is it worthwhile to do a flush?
You mean like a cleanse?
Yeah, like.
Yeah, I mean, typically, I mean,
I've never done it myself, but I mean, okay. Actually, I'm wrong. Because being over the age of 50, what's the one thing that you should do?
Colonoscopy.
Oh, you're cleaned out.
Oh yeah, you are. Anybody who's never had it, listen. You want to talk about a good time and a waste of a day? Is when once you drink that stuff,
you're done.
It's done.
You're over. You know, seeing liquid going from a color to a clear is also kind of
interesting.
Very, very, very interesting. I mean, I think the toughest part is just having the diet for the day and eating, if you're going to have anything.
Right.
I mean, I'll do like clear Jell-O, I'll do, broth and stuff like that. It's interesting. But, so I'm wrong. I have been cleaned out, per se, but...
I feel like it's like a spring thing. I don't know if it's just became that, like a spring cleaning, but it's literally everyone does it in the spring.
We sell a ton of cleanses in the spring.
Do you really?
Yeah, we do. Just a renewal. The winter's over and you just want to feel good for the summer and you want to lose a little weight. So we do a lot. But some people we have to do it by season.
Yeah. I mean, my first employee ever at Healthy Appetites
26 years ago
was a woman from Germany. And she was very into the cleansing.
Yes.
And she always did it in the spring and the fall.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And she said, that's how we do it.
What if it's like a family thing? Like if that's how... that's how her family has longevity, and they say, hey, best way to get all the chemicals and anything you may have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like it was a cultural thing over in Germany that's what they do, so.
They say it.
Interesting.
I feel the Europeans kind of know how to do it.
I feel like they're a little more natural in general.
Yeah. Their doctors are more natural than ours, that's for sure.
As I was saying to Jeff early on, I want to make sure I don't forget this, so as I'm like holding my cell phone here, and I don't want to leave my audience hanging, because... I have been doing, like I said, a little bit of an experiment with a couple of different brains. Supposedly, they improve your performance. Neuriva,
yep.
Focus Factor, and Prevagen. I have not delved into Prevagen yet, but I am liking the Neuriva. I did do Focus Factor for a couple of weeks.
What's in the Neuriva, Jeff?
You know what? I don't know. I don't sell it, and
no,
I didn't get a chance to look. But but I can tell you that I wasn't really impressed with Focus Factor either. Especially, I think you had the gummies.
Yeah. Am I going wrong with the gummies?
Typically, yes. You're going to get a worse product as a gummy than you do as a tablet or a capsule.
Oh.
Because they've got to, limit the size. You're limited to a gummy size.
Yep.
And you're also limited to taste to a certain extent. If you put in a lot of ingredients, it just tastes horrible.
Sure.
It's going to be a really bad gummy.
Sure.
So they will sometimes leave out an effective ingredient because it doesn't taste good.
Or they'll tell you to take 4 gummies.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the things we have. It's you look at it and people go, oh, great, you have this in the gummy. Yeah, you got to take 4 of them.
Yeah, and I will admit last year there was a time when I was doing all chewables, you know, whether it was vitamin C, whether it was multivitamin.
A lot of people did that last year, we noticed. We sold a lot of gummies, a lot of chewables.
Is that bad? I mean...
No. I think that a lot of it had to do with, you know, last year and the year before. We got a lot of new people who never thought about taking things for their immunity, who suddenly said, I'm going to take things for my immunity. And then they'd say, but I don't want to swallow a pill.
Right.
So gummies and chewables have exploded.
Interesting. And again, if you are tuned in, we got Jeff and Eileen Hills. You remember them when they used to have their healthy appetites. their show. Well, the missus is always active on social media. Jeff is the guy when you go to the store. He'll show you everything that's there. He has a lot of knowledge of everything that he has there and an understanding. And he'll tell you, hey, this is good. This is, I may not recommend it, but I've heard good things.
We're always honest.
There's a few things we have for other people. You know, we don't necessarily love them, but other people do. So we say, oh, you've got this, but, you know, I would recommend that.
Yeah.
Now, do you have anything that is highly sought after as far as immunity in your store?
Oh, yes.
Well... You know, I don't know if everyone's been paying attention, but there's this pandemic thing going on for, like, it seems like the last 17 years or so now.
Yeah.
So.
Going on 18.
It's like Spanish flu times two.
Yes. But I would say quercetin.
Quercetin is the big hot thing because it's not something you see a lot of. Yeah. So, you know, people have heard of ivermectin and hydrochloroquine, and those are things that we refer to as zinc ionospores, and they help get the zinc, they shuttle the zinc into the cell where the zinc can kill the COVID. Well, that's the thing that it's killing right now is COVID. So quercetin is an over-the-counter thing that is very similar in performance to ivermectin and hydrochloroquine.
It drives the zinc into the cell?
Gets the zinc into the cell so the zinc can do its job and kill what you want out of there. So that's been huge. Vitamin D has exploded, but it's always been big in our store.
Yeah.
But I think vitamin D, I mean, at the onset of COVID in early 2020, that was one of the things that
that was
rumored to be something that could help or assist with kind of keeping COVID at bay, or at least...
I can tell you, I read about this stuff all day. You know, this is my big focus is, you know, what can we do for COVID? What works? What doesn't work? I think we're doing a lot of things that don't work. I think we're starting to do more things that do work. I think that this thing's on the run and on its way out, thankfully.
Really?
Yeah.
But I think vitamin D seems to be, you know, from what I've read, kind of triangulating everyone's opinion, that seems to be the thing that's the best indicator of whether you're going to get COVID or not, is if you have low vitamin D or high vitamin D. If your vitamin D is high, I think you're going to be pretty good. And I think if you do get it, you won't get it as bad.
They found that with cancer, too. Low D, a lot of people get cancer. High D, it's harder.
Yeah, and D's this thing that, I mean, if you had asked me 20 years ago, what's the most boring thing in the store? I would have said, vitamin D. It's always been a coin flip, vitamin A, vitamin D, you know.
And we could only sell 800 units of it. Now we do 5,000, 10,000.
Yeah, we have it in 10,000 IUs. So it's sold, you know, we typically recommend, we have always recommended before COVID, that people do 5,000 IUs or 125 micrograms. You'll see it labeled both ways.
Okay.
They're both the same. And I think that's important. I think that most physicians tell people too low of a number. I don't know if it's because they think the numbers sound extremely high. 1,000, 2,000, 5,000.
Yeah.
But they usually recommend 1,000 or 2,000 at
maybe
the most.
Number, maybe the, when you're saying 1,000, it can be a little confusing.
Yeah, yeah, I think it just sounds high. I think people think, wow, that sounds astronomical.
And 7,000 is the therapeutic dose, right? So if you're low D, you want to do at least 7,000 a day for a while?
Well, pretty much. I mean, if you think about it, when you go, when you get the pharmaceutical D, they'll give you 50,000 IUs. If you do the math in that, you take it once a week. Well, 50,000 divided by 7, it's a little over 7,000 a day.
Holy cow, yeah.
So in what the research shows, that usually you have to be about 7 or 8,000 a day if you're deficient to get your numbers up. So we always think, well, then why do you tell people to take 1,000 or 2,000?
Right.
You know, tell them to take a better amount.
Isn't it fun to be back on the radio talking about health?
It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
I actually went the wrong way coming here.
Yeah, that's, he did. We didn't even know how to get here anymore.
I don't know.
It's dark.
I just went, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm going the wrong way.
I was like, where are you going?
I'm like, when did they build all this stuff up?
Yeah, we haven't been here for 5 years. Although I was here in the summer with Rob Hakula. I did the morning show one morning.
Oh.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's a tough gig. Oof.
Oh, you do it.
Oof.
You do it with your eyes closed.
That's rough.
So as we wrap up our segment with Jeff and Eileen Hills from Healthy Appetites, anything we want to say closing out our segment that we've overlooked, or you want to make sure you at least get out the word about?
Yes, I'm healthyappetites.com. We can ship to you. I have a lot of people from Marshfield on my social media, so hello. You can also do pickup. We've got a whole pickup thing going on in healthyappetites.com. I'm on social media on Facebook under Healthy Appetites. I'm on
Twitter.
And where I see Kevin. Right. And I'm on Instagram at Plymouth Healthy. And I'm on there every day. So you can ask me anything.
Well, and I'm on none of those things.
Yes, and Jeff's not. So I give him the messages.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Kevin.
And having a very informative and an entertaining conversation about some of these things that are affecting us all, whether it's immunity to improving our brain functions.
That's right. Yeah. Always great seeing you.
Great seeing you as well. Tell Fanny I said hi.
Okay.
We will.
That does it for hour number one. Oh my God, where did it go? When we come back, Bishop Tony Branch takes the seat. Talk with him in just a few moments here on 95.9
WATD. WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both, because being connected feels good, and who doesn't need more of that these days? Don't miss Talk with Francesca Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Michelle Markowitz with Cardinal Cushing Centers. Our mission is to change lives of students and adults with developmental disabilities by supporting them to achieve their best ability of independence. We are located in Hanover and in Braintree. To get involved or to make a donation, please visit our website at cushingcenters.org or 781-826-6371. Thank you, and please continue to support the amazing nonprofit organizations on the South Shore.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. Wow, the show is flying by.
Jeez.
This is your Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Episode. This is a show today. Hopefully you have done some service in the name of the good doctor. Honestly enough, the gentleman who is sitting in front of me right now will give us an update on some stuff that he was doing in his city.
Yeah.
But just a quick note, later this hour, Casey Sherman joins us. We'll chat with him about not only his new book, but also some other upcoming things that he's got going on. Author, award-winning author, journalist, producer, podcaster, and much more. That's right, the one and only Casey Sherman. But right now, we have Bishop Tony Branch, who is joining us right at this moment. He is the chair of the Commission on Diversity. He's also the chair of the Southeastern Regional School Committee.
I am.
He's also a radio personality.
A little bit. Not like you, though.
He's also he also is on the NAACP. What's your title?
I am the first vice president within the Brockton area branch NAACP.
So, a little bit of an update. I saw your video earlier.
Oh, some
great things going on at Brockton Community Access.
Yes.
One North Main Street.
You got it. Yep.
And I saw a lot of community helping to do
day of service.
Yes.
Yeah, day of service. Naturally, with respect to Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, awesome work done by BCA as well as the NAACP, the Cape Verdean Association of Brockton, several Brockton City Councilors, Moses Rodriguez, Rita Mendez, Shirley Azak. If I miss anyone, charge it to my mind, not to my heart. I need focus factor. DA Cruz was there, Plymouth County District Attorney, and others. It was really about giving care packages to the homeless with respect to Father Bill's in Main Street. But we're going too far. I want to thank you, Kevin, for having this conversation around MLK's birthday. This holiday was signed into law 35 years ago. I want to thank the WAT family as well for having me here. Thank you.
It's, you know, I feel it's a very valuable conversation to have on a quarterly basis, to come and sit down and talk. And I thank you for being a willing conversationalist to talk about it. I think, you know, not all conversations are easy.
Right.
But sometimes you got to have them so we have a better understanding and we know the best direction to go to make things happen.
Right, right.
I think I ask you this every year.
Mm.
And I'm going to ask you it again today in 2022. What would the good doctor say in regards to civil rights in this at this very point?
So...
And this is just your opinion as to what you think.
Right, but I don't want to speak for Dr. King or his family. I would say this, the impact of the voting laws that have happened in many of these states has so diminished the legacy, respectfully, the bipartisan legacy of how we came into having President Johnson signed in 1965 Voting Rights Act. I think Dr. King would say that this is work not well done to diminish the voting rights of African Americans and other minorities simply because there is a flood, respectfully, of supremacy that's happening in our nation, which is unfortunate. This is really about privilege keeping power. And I've said for a very long time, as we try to have gotten away from the conversation of race, focusing on excellence versus me saying, you're my white brother and I'm your black, but really focusing on excellence, I think that we've gotten ourselves into a pretty bad pickle right now. As you know, it began in 2013 with the Shelby County decision, which basically gutted the bipartisan work that had been done among Democrats, Southern Democrats, which were really Republicans back then. people don't know the history of that. We've been trying to change all that by doing the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which is going to fail on Tuesday because folks within the Democratic Party have decided not to cooperate with the voting progress here in the United States, which is disturbing, actually.
Is it that the folks are the Democrats nervous about the midterms and they don't want to take any kind of unilateral action?
Kevin, when are we going to get into the conversation around saving the Republic? Well, when are we going to get out of the conversation of saying that I'm an R, I'm a D, I'm unenrolled, and really understand that voting is the core of our democracy? We all are frustrated when we try to have these conversations because I don't understand why we can't have 99-0 from the Senate on the core importance of our democracy, and that is for each American that is eligible to vote to have the ability to vote.
Do you feel voting is the only area of discrimination? What are some of the others that folks aren't aware of because they haven't experienced it?
Well, we know that when we have these conversations, Kevin, you and I have had this conversation, it's really about lens. It's really about looking at, you know, I'm a data guy, I like numbers. We know that historically within the criminal justice system, it is a racist institution. We know that there's a higher number of black and brown that are incarcerated, and we know that there's economics behind that. So when we talk about discrimination, we have to get to the core elements that are causing the problems that we are having in this country. What I've said since the murder of George Floyd, when everybody started finally to get on the taking of a knee, one of the things that I love about my city is that my mayor, Robert Sullivan, took a knee. What I love about my city is that the chief of police at that time, Manny Gomes, took a knee. And what people don't understand is the symbolism of taking that knees in the midst of other whites saying, we're tired of black people complaining, we're about the blue, you guys are crazy. The symbolism about having unity among white folks that are sick and tired of seeing unarmed black men die is so important in this country. So for us, it's like, personally, I'm tired of the black and white conversation. I want to have a conversation like Dr. King tried to have with us about brotherhood and about neighborly love. That is what's being lost in these conversations. There seems to be, it's not even tribalism. There's such a political isolation in this country. I think, Kevin, we need to be honest. We're on some pretty dangerous ground. Now, the question is, one of the things that Dr. King asked, he says, life's most persistent and urgent question, what are you doing for others? So when we look at today as a day of service, that's fine. You did it on the MLK, the day that is being recognized. But what are you doing on a daily basis that helps to solve the problems of your nation, not because you're black or white, but because you're an American? And I'm frustrated. I'm in tears over this pain because I'm not understanding. When I talk to people like yourself and others, and you know, I'm not gonna give them what we used to call good white folk. Good white folk. When we talk about good white folk, you know what I mean? So many are like yourself and others. There needs to be more. Because this is not gonna be solved by black or brown. This has to be solved by my white cousins who are willing to say, we're not going to destroy this nation. This republic is too important.
But I'm kind of feeling like a doom. Let me ask you this, though. So I feel that you're kind of, you're underlying some of the failures that we're seeing when it comes to the civil rights movement. Am I wrong here?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There has to have been some successes over the past 5 years or 10 years, have there not? They might be minuscule, but it has to be at least a couple that at least are the building blocks to move forward.
We're qualifying this in my training here. The last 5 years, no. Okay. No, there are no examples.
None.
The only example that we can speak to is the political example, and people will automatically turn to the election of Kamala Harris as the vice president. So what? Okay. I'm being respectful. So what?
Okay.
What other accomplishments have we had? Let me just say this. Maybe I should clean it up. On a federal level, no. On a state level, yes. When you look at the work that Jerry and Claire Croner has done around criminal justice reform, that's a civil rights win for those of us that are in the Commonwealth. A national model. Quite frankly, a lot of people don't know that. Claire Croner, who's now the ambassador to Ireland.
I was going to say, ambassador to Ireland.
Yes, ambassador to Ireland. Yes. Ambassador Cronin, excuse me. So work has absolutely been done. But we are pausing, and the reason why people are pausing on not talking about those successes is because we are all really focused on what's happening on the federal level. The federal government, as we know, of its importance, as symbolized what happened on January 6th. And people are focusing, and they're not necessarily focusing on what's happening locally. Although we all know, because I say this all the time, Tip O'Neill says, you know, all politics is local. But we've had some examples here in the Commonwealth, but everybody's focusing on what's happening nationally.
He is Bishop Tony Branch here as my guest, and we're having a humble conversation here.
We're trying.
About the civil rights movement. Where is it at this point? I mean, has it made any kind of movement forward? What needs to be done to continue any progress, if there has been any?
I think that a part of the struggle is, yes, we have Abrams in Georgia, yes, we have Bishop Barber, yes, we have the NAACP, but what we don't have is a sort of marching, the sort of in-your-face, peaceful demonstration in-your-face that we're used to. I think that when you look at a Dr. Martin Luther King, you look at someone that was arrested 30 times, you look at the other assassination, the time that he was stabbed in the chest, in his heart, by this deranged woman, we don't have civil rights leader, in my estimate, that are willing to really push the envelope. Where are our Thurgood Marshalls that are coming out of the African-American communities, these folks that are attorneys that have gone, that are willing to go to the wall with respect to civil rights? We don't have them as aggressive. We have them, but I don't think they're as aggressive. I think that we have been kind of lazy. I know people might push back, but I think that we've been kind of lazy in the current civil rights movement. And I think that we just need to be, our leaders need to be a little bit more aggressive. Yes, we have a plan, but how do we aggressively approach that plan? I'm going to give you the clearest example. What can we do? What can I do as civil rights leaders to change the minds of those Republicans that, you know, if we get three or four Republicans, this Voting Rights Act passes on the Senate side. Dr. King would have figured that out.
Right. How, peacefully, too.
Peacefully, exactly. Peacefully. How to bring them into the fold. We don't have the sort of President Biden, there's no Lyndon Baines Johnson to twist some arms. It's okay. I'm a bishop, but it's okay to swear at him once in a while. So we don't have that sort of, I dare to say, a political aggressiveness that is nonviolent but gets us the result required in order for us to save this union.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question.
Uh-oh, here we go.
CRT.
Oh, don't do it. Don't do it.
What is it?
So you know CRT is a academic graduate level review of systems that was created by attorneys to look at racial injustices. And I think that, so we don't teach it in local schools. CRT is not taught in local schools. It's a university level, high graduate academic for those that get master's and doctorate degrees. And, you know, we're scaring people when we talk about CRT. A part of this conversation is also that when I've had this conversation, people are really saying, well, we want to make sure that we're not doing or pushing white guilt. And we should not be doing that. We should be telling the truth about the history of the United States. And that's going to include having a frank conversation that no one really wants to have. And part of the problem that folks don't want to have it is because how do? We always label a person a name. We call them a racist. We have to have a deliberate model that we're not doing that.
So the reason why I do ask you that is that I'm seeing more and more folks showing up at local school committee meetings.
Yes.
Asking if the concept is being taught in local schools. Why is there such confusion, and why is this concept under attack? What if it was going to be taught locally?
Well, it wouldn't be taught. It's graduate level.
But what I'm saying is you have a misunderstanding here.
Well, no, there's no misunderstanding. It's politics. And I think that people are, you know, there's enough going on in the country that people are believing things. And I'm going to be really, they're just not, people, we talk about the election. People are believing things that simply are not true. But I have hope and faith in the American people. I think that they're much smarter than people are trying to portray them. And we know that because when we look
with all due respect, we're going to go on to say, when we look at text messages between certain people in the White House on January 6th of that year, we see that people were reaching out saying that this has to stop, it's crazy. Then we see that they're changing their mind when they come into the public view. This is why I know the American people are smart. The American people can see that there was a distinct change between people communicating with the White House and what they said publicly later. Americans are very intelligent, and I think that they'll get through this nonsense about CRT being taught in local schools, which it is not. CRT is not taught in local schools.
But what do we need? What needs to be done for folks to understand where the very root of systematic racism began,
mm-hmm.
and how to extract it? So moving forward, that our children, our grandchildren, and their children are taught that this is how things were, this is how, moving forward, we want there to be equality for everybody, regardless of
right.
color, gender.
Right, right. The question is, or let me put it to you this way. As an African-American male, I'm not going to be able to teach or to impress upon white children that there has been a significant wrong in the creation of a nation economically on slavery. That's got to come from the truth of white parents.
Mm.
And I think that that's where the huge conversation comes in, is that, well, I didn't do it, Reverend. I ain't teaching it to my kids. I think that there's room for us to begin to have this conversation now. No, I'm wrong. I thought that it would be room to have this conversation after Mr. Floyd was murdered. Yep. George Floyd was murdered. But I'm not sure that we're going to ever be able to revisit that, because the political climate in the nation has gotten to the point where is that people are violently responding to whether or not there should be a shift in power in this country to as we become majority minority. And that's the truth. That's exactly what's going on. We just have to admit that. I mean, you know, folks don't want change. And this country is browning. By 2035, we'll be a brown nation. And that's scary to a lot of people. As when we came out of slavery during Reconstruction, it was scary to a lot of people that black men were legally able to vote. So it's a scary thing, especially in the background of your mind. We know that we've done some pretty bad things to people.
But we're living in an era of fake news, and there's different parts of truths being spun.
Right,
right. How will we be able to tell the complete story? And let's not forget also, when it comes to education, a lot of school districts.
Yeah,
there are folks who are out there, former educators,
right,
who sell, you know, materials when it comes to educating in different history books. And what's not to say that a lot of the information that's being taught to our children, there are things that are being omitted and not being given the full facts of our nation.
Right, but so what frustrates me about states like the Commonwealth that have predominantly Democratic political beliefs is that the history books that have typically been taught, that are used in the Commonwealth, which are controlled by school committees. Books are controlled by school committees. They're the ones that set that policy. And people, so you elect your school committee members, you need to have an expectation that those history books are going to reflect the truthfulness of how this country was birthed.
Isn't that interesting? So with all this information, mm-hmm. that just in the mere 20 minutes you've been here, 20 minutes, I mean, it's flown. Can civil rights make any progress this year? I know it sounds silly, but...
I'm going to say this, and I hope it might rattle some people. I'm going to say that we have an uphill battle. I'm going to say that whereas we have talked about young people voting, young people don't vote. Yep, we need to be honest about that. Young people, they're on the social media platforms. They want change. We have all these folks talking about they're progressives, et cetera, but they don't hit the polls. So for me, it's like if you are not voting, you're not going to be able to make change. We have a problem on Tuesday.
We have a problem, Kevin.
Apathy.
People are not, you know, and let me tell you something. There is one specific political party that knows that not only that there's apathy, but they know that Democrats don't have a backbone. Biden has some opportunities to do some executive action around voting rights. Let him do some executive actions and let the chips fall where they may. Let it hit the Supreme Court. Something's got to give in this country. You have McCarthy saying once he becomes speaker,
all bets are off.
All bets are off. Mm. And we're gonna live with that for at least a decade. So people, you know, you got to be able to, take it seriously to participate in this process. So if you believed in anything the MLK was saying, participate, demonstrate peacefully. No, none of these riot craps. Demonstrate peacefully. Try to make a difference. But, you know, again, young people have to be willing to vote their conscience, and I think America still has some challenges in that area.
You mentioned the current administration and President Biden.
I'm not happy with Joe. I'm not happy with him.
Well, you're one of the.
I backed him. I'm not happy with him.
The 67% do not find his. You're not approving of what he's doing.
I know. I've said to people, I really believe this, and you know, people can challenge me on this. They're going to message me later on. First of all, I believe that 2024, Trump is back. I believe that he will be sworn in January of 2025. I also believe that Dr. King would have been able to work with President Trump. One of the things that people seem to forget, that President Trump gained an 8% increase and the vote of African-American males. And people are like, why? This guy's saying this, he's saying that. One of the things that you all understand in the tradition of African-Americans, one of the things that we love about
white... Someone tells the truth.
Exactly.
Yes.
If you tell us the truth, that's it.
Even if it's crazy.
He's right. As long if that's your position...
Tell us the way it is, yeah.
Right. If that's your position in telling me like it is... At least I know where you stand. Right. And that's the tradition of African American. So for us, it's not a misnomer for me to see why he was getting. I think that President Trump will be back in 2024. And we got to figure out how to work with these Republicans. We got to figure this out. And I think that one of the things we're going to have to do, instead of the critique and the criticism, we're going to have to use the Dr. King model of talking about the morality, the failures in morality of what you're doing. This is the love message. This is the neighborly love message. And it goes back to, what are you doing for others? I think that's the message that we need to bring moving forward. I don't mean to preach to nobody.
No. Yeah. Bishop, it's okay. It's all good. I will say this. I'm going to openly say this.
Mm-hmm.
It's long overdue for America to have a third party. And you know what? You want to know where that third party would come from?
Mm.
If moderate Republicans join the moderate Democrats, because a lot of their ideals are very similar. They
want to
work in the middle of the road.
Absolutely.
It's some of the folks who are within each party that are taking things to
right.
a further extreme.
Right.
And it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet you if those folks say, hey, let's form our own little party.
Right.
That might gain some traction. It's an idea.
Well, it's not only an idea. Remember the threat. From President Donald J. Trump. He said, I'm going to walk away from the Republicans if they don't do what I tell them to do.
Right.
And the Republicans considered that to be a significant threat, that he could have literally created a third party here in America.
I give you the final word as we wrap up this great segment that you and I just had. What would you like to say in regards to kind of encapsulate what we talked about here today?
A day of service happened today in celebration of the 35th anniversary of the signing of Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King, birthday into law. As we know, George Washington, President Lincoln, and then there's Dr. King. I think that it's important for us to walk away with this in mind. You hear an African-American male telling you this: I don't want you to consider me to be the black leader. I want you to consider me to be an American leader that really wants to work with anyone across any aisle in order to improve our republic. I think that we're in trouble right now, And I think a lot of that has to do with the lack of neighborly love that we should have for each other's neighbors. We did it. Let me tell you something. Folks, if you listen, we did it on 9/11. We were united on 9/11. Yep. We were all in tears, regardless. We were Americans against a single threat, and that was terrorism. Why can't we do that today?
He is Bishop Tony Branch, a great guest, reoccurring guest, occasional co-host. We'll have to have you back on in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
We're going to step aside. Final segment is on deck. Casey Sherman. We'll talk with him in a few moments about his new book, Helltown. You're tuning in to 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck, snapback or rock. Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
I need to be able to work from anywhere, so I need to have supplies, well, everywhere.
It's possible at Staples.
I need the same setup for my home as I have at the office, without twice the cost.
Also possible, because your local Staples store has the tools your business needs to get work done. Now get 40% back in a Staples store bonus when you buy any two ink or toner cartridges. Explore what's new at Staples, the working and learning store. Ends 1/15, limit 2 in-store only. See staplesconnect.com/store bonus for details.
Give the gift they want this year, a new iPhone 12 from Pure Talk for just $479. Pure Talk gives you great prices and great 5G coverage with unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. The average family saves over $800 a year. Just dial #250 and say Jill50, and you'll save 50% off your first month and save on a new iPhone. Dial #250 and say Jill50. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we return for one last segment on your Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday weekend. Of course, we're closing it out here on Monday Night Talk. And joining us right now, it's been a while since we've had a chance to catch up with Casey Sherman, award-winning journalist, author, producer, podcaster. I could probably go on for the next 5 or 10 minutes with all the other titles that are bestowed to his name and all the things that he works on. I sometimes look in the mirror and go, you work too hard. And then when I sit down and I talk with Casey, I realize that he works twice as hard as I do. So it's an honor and a privilege to be able to talk to you, Casey. How are you doing here in 2022?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me back. You know, you have a great show, and I always like coming in and chatting a little bit about, you know, what we've been up to, which is, you know, we've had a pretty interesting year, and we look forward to a great 2022.
Yeah, you touched upon that. If you look back in retrospect on the year that was 2021, here we are. We're immersed in a global pandemic still as we moving into the new year. But you still were able to still remain busy and be productive. You know, what were some of the things that you could put into perspective?
Sure. Well, you know, as a writer, it's kind of a solitary profession anyway, Kevin. So, I mean, our lives obviously were impacted as everybody else. And but I think, you know, the work itself wasn't necessarily impacted too greatly. So we just put our nose to the grindstone and got the job done. You know, I wrote a book in 2021 that comes out this year and spent a lot of time on that. As you mentioned, our podcast has been pretty popular as well. And, you know, we were lucky and fortunate. We've just spent 14 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list for The Last Days of John Lennon, which is a book that we co-authored with a guy known as James Patterson.
let's talk a little bit about that. Where does that stand? Is that still on the bestsellers list? And are you also doing print in other languages now?
Yeah, you know, the book, we've been very fortunate. The book, I believe, is now printed in, I think, 10 languages around the world. We just, as I said, celebrated 14 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list for the paperback. The hardcover came out a year ago. The paperback came out last fall, and it just gives us another bite at the apple and another opportunity to tell, you know, the unknown story of John Lennon's life, which amazingly so much has been written about this global icon, but we're still able to bring a new perspective to, you know, his story and ultimately, you know, his tragic end.
This isn't the first book that you've had on the bestsellers list, right?
No, I've been fortunate. This is my fifth New York Times bestseller. So, you know, knock on wood. I love all the books that I've written dearly, and some of them are more commercially viable than others. But each project for me personally is a journey. And, you know, as I said, I look at them as my children, and I love each one equally.
What is it like to be bestowed that honor, bestseller, having a bestseller, and does it get old?
It never gets old, and they can't take that away from you. You know, so it's what you aspire to. When you know, I mean, I'm celebrating 20 years as a published author this year, and I look back at that journey, 15 books in 20 years, and you know, it's been very prolific. But I look back at the people I've gotten to meet and interview, and the stories I've gotten to tell, and that's really where the riches lie. You know, whether you get financial or commercial success is another matter altogether. But if you do what you love, you know, we mentioned work at the beginning of the show here. You know, it's not work if you love it, Kevin. And you, I'm sure, feel the same way with what you do.
It's funny. You posted something on social media the other day, and I really, it resonated with me. You look back at your life as to, you know, this guy from the Cape. You know, did you ever imagine that you'd be where you are now? And how do you feel that the journey you have been on can be an inspiration to somebody else who looks at their life and doesn't feel as though there's much to it?
Yeah, you know, Kevin, it's interesting. I mean, I grew up, I'm the son of a single mom on Cape Cod, you know, who's my hero. She was had her own little hairdressing business and did everything she could to, you know, just put food on the table for my brother and myself. I called myself the accidental author. I never believed I'd be writing books one day, but I was thrust into the spotlight because of my aunt's murder case. She was the last victim in the Boston Strangler case, Mary Sullivan. And as a young journalist, I took a fresh look at that story in that case and wrote a book about it. It's, you know, kind of half investigative journalism, half family memoir. And I thought, you know what, I can do this. There are other stories to tell. And I'll tell you, I'm a big believer in visualization, Kev. So if you believe it and you can see it in your mind's eye, you can make it happen. And I share a story that after I'd written The Finest Hours, which is now considered a maritime classic, I was in New York City at Times Square. And this is before the movie was even a reality. And I was looking at a particular billboard in Times Square, and I just visualized The Finest Hours being there one day. I had no idea how I was going to make that happen, but I saw it. And amazingly enough, in 2016, when the movie came out, I went down to New York City, stood in Times Square, and I'm not kidding you, the billboard was exactly where I had visualized it 5 years before.
Have you ever thought of giving, you know, I see like Ron Howard, I see all these well-known actors or folks who are in the crafts, and they do these master classes. Mm-hmm. You see Steve Martin, who does a master class on comedy. You ever thought of doing a master class on being an author or being the, you know, the media renaissance man that you are?
I mean, I'm always willing to help aspiring writers. You know, sought help and got help from some really well-known authors when I was just starting out, people like Anne Rule, who didn't have to respond to my request for a blurb for my first book, but she did. And so I always, you know, try to put myself out there. If anybody ever has a question, they can certainly reach me on social media. And, you know, it's quite frankly one of the reasons why we came up with a pretty unique opportunity and event that we're having at the Chatham Bars Inn later this month. It's a storytelling competition, Kevin, for novelists and screenwriters. And it's, you know, basically in the mold of American Idol and The Voice, although there's no Simon Cowell on the panel. You know, it's three judges who really want to elevate people's careers and people's stories. And it's just a way to give back. And I love doing it.
You mentioned the panel. You'll be part of the panel. One of your co-writers, Dave Webb, and also another great author, Hank Phillippe Ryan, investigative reporter as well. The three of you are going to be doing this, right?
Yeah, the three of us are going to be doing it. Hank is a tremendous novelist, yes. Really carved out a great career for herself as a mystery writer. Hank and I have known each other for 30 years when we both were, you know, in the television news business. And I'm astounded by her success, but not surprised. I think she's fantastic, and I think she can really teach a lot to people, you know, especially writers in her space, you know, that mystery genre that she does so well at. So we're going to be, you know, judging people's elevator pitches and ultimately landing on a winner where we will mentor that writer for a year, whether it's their manuscript ready for publication or their screenplay ready to be produced as a TV series or a film. So, and again, we're doing this just because we feel like we've been so fortunate and lucky. It's a great way to give back. So anybody that's interested in there are still a few spots available, people can go right to the Chatham Bars Inn website. I think it's chathambarsinn.com. Learn a little bit more about the weekend and how they can potentially participate.
That is so invaluable. They'd be able to tap into three skilled writers that have seen success. That's amazing.
And we'll be mentoring all weekend. You know, it's not just judging a competition, but, you know, carving out time with these writers and going over their stories and trying to help them in any way we can.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Casey Sherman, journalist, author, producer, and humanitarian, as he's going to be giving back the January 28th to 30th at the Chatham Bars. He was just talking about it a moment ago. I'm going to go back and we're going to go in another form of media. You had mentioned it earlier in the conversation, Casey, and that's in regards to your podcast, very successful podcast, Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers. Of course, I believe that your producer is a good friend of mine, Mike Joshua,
who does that. That's right. Yeah, Mike's great.
Mike does an awesome job. Also, can be heard here on 95.9 WATD Americanorama, and his very smooth voice and adultery tones. But talk to us. How are things going with the podcast?
Yeah, the podcast has really been a great vehicle for us, especially in the pandemic, where we have been taking a lot of our immersive stories and bringing them into the podcast world. And I think, you know, because there are so many true crime podcasts out there, we were very slow to get into that space because a lot of those podcasts are, you know, hosted by armchair amateur sleuths, where we are, you know, authentic voices in the investigative journalism space. And these stories that we tell, we've lived them. You know, we're not just reading them from somebody's headline or somebody's book. These are our stories. These are our investigations. And I think it you know, provides that level of credibility and storytelling that in my opinion is lacking in that space. But it's been a great vehicle for us. We really like it.
Yeah, so you got a great event that's being held at the Wilbur, a fantastic space. Talk to us about the event that you're going to be doing come this April via Mudhouse Media.
Yeah, we're bringing Saints, Sinners, Serial Killers to the stage at the Wilbur Theater, and we're going to be performing, many of the stories that we've been telling on our podcasts. And we've got, we've hired an amazing ensemble cast of local actors that have all done very well in television, film, and on stage. And it's going to be a really unique, multi-dimensional storytelling evening at the Wilbur Theater. Tickets are available. It's April 20th. People can go right to the Wilbur Theater website and order their tickets. But imagine just being immersed in true crime storytelling, you know, for a night in the spring. And I think it's something that people will really enjoy.
Cool and exciting is that that you and Dave and Mudhouse Media, you guys are able to kind of, this is like a new element per se, to be able to take what you've crafted in a podcast and have it something that materializes using actors on stage.
It's great. It's a great challenge. And it, you know, it's great to be collaborative with not only our actors, but our director, Ian Barrett, who's a very popular director in Massachusetts. Chris Meyer, who is going to be producing this event with us as well. And we're telling the stories of the Boston Strangler, Whitey Bulger, John Lennon, and another book that I had written back in 2011 called Bad Blood, which is about a police shooting in Franconia, New Hampshire. So, you know, there are, you know, different elements for the entire audience to really grab hold of and make their own. But it's going to be fantastic. And we want, you know, the audience to be completely surprised. You know, there's going to be a thrill and a chill around every corner. And I would just say for the people sitting at the audience, your head's going to be on a swivel because you don't know where and when these actors are going to be coming at you.
I would ask you this again, knowing that you already have so many projects, so many irons in the fire, depending on the success of this, is this something that could be, you know, taken around America possibly?
Oh, I don't do anything small, Kevin. And I always, I've been kind of grooming and building this show for several years, quite frankly, and getting it to where it is today. I would love to bring this to Broadway at some point because I think it's unique enough where people will gravitate toward the material.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to hearing news if that is something that once that finally hits the front burner and is something that's publicly known out there as you finally put all the pieces together. Talking about, again, the event that is coming up in April 20th, a couple of days ago, you actually had a little bit of a production meeting. What was that like?
No, it's interesting, you know, to be walking on the same stage where Marlon Brando first performed Streetcar Named Desire. You know, there's tremendous history on that stage and in that theater. And I love it. I'm a big Hollywood history nut. You know, I can't get enough of those old stories. And I feel very fortunate to be, you know, a small part in that Hollywood history as well with the Finest Hours and the Patriots Day. So it's a thrill. And we're just, you know, we were looking at the stage space and what we can do with it, what we can do with the balcony spaces as well. As I said, it's going to be a great night, you know, and it gives a lot of the local actors, you know, a great thing to be putting on their resume to be, you know, performing at the Wilbur. So we're excited for it.
Is there any information that you could provide our listeners as to if anybody's looking to get tickets to this special event?
Yes, just go right to wilburtheater.com. And Google Saints, Sinners, Serial Killers at the Wilbur, and tickets are still available.
I feel as though all of our conversation has been like appetizers leading up to the main course, talking about your new book. I think you recently just had, you just got your first, yes, exactly, as you're showing me the book, the release. Talk to me about Helltown, the untold story of a serial killer on Cape Cod. And I believe is this your first solo book in a bit?
No, well, it is. I've written solo books in the past, but the last solo book I wrote was called Animal, which is about Joe Barboza, the mafia hitman. And that was in 2014. And, you know, Dave Wedge and I have been writing together for, you know, several years. And we decided to pursue a couple of solo projects. Dave's got a thrilling new book coming out in March, and I'm sure he'll be on to talk about that. Helltown is a true story. It's a story about a serial killer named Tony Costa. 1969, Provincetown in Truro. He lured at least four young women into the woods in an old ancient cemetery, murdered them, and then dismembered their bodies and buried them in shallow graves. Now, the story on its face is absolutely terrifying. He was a young, very charismatic guy. But my way into the story, I'm really focusing on two writers that become obsessed by the case. Norman Mailer, who was living in Provincetown at the time, and Kurt Vonnegut, who was living just down the road in Barnstable. And both men become obsessed by the case. They you know, pursue it as writing projects. And I look at their careers, and they were different writers at the time. Norman Mailer was a household name, you know, having had his first major bestseller right out of the gate in the 1940s called The Naked and the Dead. Kurt Vonnegut's, you know, road to fame and fortune was a lot longer. And in 1969, he was basically a commercial failure as a writer because Slaughterhouse-Five hadn't come out yet. So here's the guy that's you know, hoping to be on that same level as Mailer. And certainly he does get there and really kind of eclipses Mailer in many ways as well. So to explore the darkness with these two writers as they are pursuing one of the most terrifying stories that I've ever, you know, had the chance to really research. I've covered well over 100 homicides in my career, Kevin. I've never seen anything this brutal. You know, having reviewed the autopsy photos and the autopsy reports and these murders, I mean, you know, those images kept me up at night writing this, and they still do.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Casey Sherman, a journalist, author, producer, podcaster, and much, much more. So talking about his new book, Helltown, The Untold Story of a Serial Killer on Cape Cod. And as he just finished, he was kind of giving you some of the details of the book. And I know I kind of teased it that this is your first solo book in 8 years, because you've been recently paired up with Dave Wedge. How different is it now? I mean, is it kind of nice to kind of have at least your own space, or do you, because you've been co-writing a series of books with Dave, that is kind of like, there's a different feel to it than when you were previously writing a book by yourself.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, both complement each other. Dave and I have a great working and personal relationship. If we didn't have that, you know, our partnership wouldn't work as well as it does. I was very eager to get Dave out there in terms of, you know, pursuing a solo project for himself and really taking on that full responsibility of writing a book. And he's done a tremendous job at it. You know, for me, it was getting back to the basics. And I love it. You know, as I said, this story itself is told not necessarily, you know, it's a very macro book in terms of the year 1969. While these murders are taking place, you know, we also have the Chappaquiddick, which happens and involves, you know, many of the same characters in my book. We have the, you know, the moon landing, again, involving Norman Mailer, who had written about it, and Kurt Vonnegut to an extent. And then the, you know, terrible tragedy in Hollywood with the Manson murders that summer, which really knocked the Cape Cod serial killer case off the front pages. You know, had Manson not come around and you know, murdered Sharon Tate and others in Hollywood, this serial murder case on Cape Cod would have been as notorious as Jack the Ripper, in my opinion, because the murders were just so heinous and the killer himself was so unique and interesting.
Do you feel that you were able to either unearth any new information, or do you feel that you were able to kind of put this particular story in a different, newer lights with what you've penned?
Yeah, you always look to unearth new information. And I think there are several moments in the book where people are learning things for the first time, but taking a different approach to the story and really, you know, getting into the mind space of your Vonnegut and your Mailer and the killer himself, Tony Costa. You know, I unearthed an unpublished manuscript that he had written in prison before he committed suicide in the early 1970s, listening to 12 hours of audio taped recordings of him in jail and getting a real understanding of this, as I said, terrifyingly complex serial killer. There are a lot of Hitchcockian tones in the book Helltown as well.
When can we expect copies of Helltown to be on the shelves?
July 12th is when the book hits stores all around the country and globally as well. You know, it'll be a terrifying beach read for anybody that is into true crime, but really just into a real unique mystery. And I think it's also a nod to, you know, two writers that I don't think people really remember that well, especially Mailer. You know, Kurt Vonnegut is still very popular amongst college students, but Mailer's body of work is just amazing. And I learned a lot from those two writers in writing this book. And quite frankly, they inspired some of the way that I wrote the book in terms of providing imagery for the readers that they had done so well in their own work.
Anything else on Howltown before we move forward and give you an opportunity to?
I've been very blessed, as I said, to kind of work in the literature space and also the film development space. So Howltown, I'm working with Robert Downey Jr. and his production company to adapt the book into a limited series for either HBO or Apple or another platform. But we've got some production meetings coming up in the next couple of weeks that we're really excited about. And hopefully we get that greenlit this year and can go into production and shoot it locally here in Massachusetts.
How unique and how excited are you that you're getting to work with Robert Downey Jr. and his team?
You're going to pinch yourself, you know, every day. It's not every day you get to work with Iron Man. And but, you know, he and his wife, Susan, who's brilliant, and their executive, Amanda Burrell, they're just really smart and cool people. And they understand storytelling. And you know, they like to work with people that they like. And we just hit it off and meshed very early. And it's been a great relationship ever since.
We just got a couple of minutes left before we have to close out the segment and ultimately close out the show. Any other news from the Casey Sherman from you and what you're working on?
Yeah, we're you know, Dave and I are pursuing, you know, several television and film projects right now that hopefully we'll have you know, an opportunity to announce at least early this spring. Dave and I are working on a new book together about Afghanistan and a unique crime that happened during the course of that god-awful war. So we're just, you know, putting a lot out there, but we love what we do. As I said, we, you know, I wake up every day and I'm writing. If I'm not physically writing, I'm writing in my head. So it keeps me going and keeps me young.
Well, as always, we thank you very much for your time, your willingness to kind of talk about the many, many projects. Same with Dave. Dave is always just as giving as you are. To pop on and talk about the many things that not only is he working on as a alone or as a solo author, but also some of the things that you guys are doing collaboratively. So it's always great and exciting to talk with a gentleman who resides right here on the South Shore.
No, we appreciate the time as always, Kevin. And, you know, it's a great conversation. And that's why I love coming on and talking with you and getting a chance to really share our stories with, you know, all of your listeners out there.
Now, do you have a website or a way for folks to, if they want to check in anything that we've talked about or follow any of the projects you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Our website is fortpointmedia.com. That's where people can get an update on our film, television, and book projects. We're easily reachable via social media, Twitter, Facebook. And if anybody wants to come and join us at Chatham Bars Inn, go to chathambarsinn.com. It's the weekend of January 28th. And anybody that wants to get tickets for the Wilbur Theater event, go to wilburtheater.com, Saints, Sinners, and Serial Killers, starring Casey Sherman and Dave Wetch.
Well, thank you so much. And again, we've been speaking with Casey Sherman. He has been our guest. And that closes it out for this portion of the radio program and for the evening. We thank you very much for tuning in. You've been tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., God willing, we'll be back. So have a great evening.